Welcome to the law offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker, a computer telecast where no legal advice is given and the lawyers are ghosts. Our only clients are topics of discussion and there is no justice for the wicked or pristine. Your fake lawyers are Matt and Greg, two men with no redeeming qualities and with opinions of no value. Listen at your own risk. And with no further ado, welcome your hosts, Matt and Greg. This is Wednesday, June 24th, 2020. We're back at the law offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker, and we've got a new client today, Greg.
Who's that?
Our new client are the most useful inventions.
We've been trying to bag that client for years.
I know, and so now we have an opportunity to see if they can put their money where their mouth is. What would you consider to be the most useful inventions that humanity has created?
When we were first having meetings with this client and to see if we'd take them on, what I kept thinking about was in school we learned about the automobile, the way that Henry Ford did the factory thing, whatever that's called.
The factory thing? Is that like a new dance? Everybody do the factory thing.
It sounds fun. The light bulb is great, but you know, candles were pretty good too. But I think my favorite invention of the past 200 years is recorded music.
Okay.
To me, that is the best invention made by far. I don't care about cars. I don't drive.
Now, do you mean recorded music, electronic recorded music, or hand-cranked recorded music?
Anything. Even the Edison cylinder was awesome.
So the original recorded music is the thing.
People could take something home with them and like hear music song anytime they wanted. And think about how amazing that is.
Yeah,
even rich people.
But humanity survived for millennia without
recorded
music.
And they survived without the car and the cotton gin. But
right, but other technologies were created without the use of music. So what makes music that important?
Even if you were a king back in 1600, you'd still have to have, even if you had the wherewithal and the gold to hire musicians all the time, they might not be very good. A good musician might not be around. So you'd never hear a good version of the song you liked. It's like, but we can hear the best version.
Well, how would you even know there were other versions? You might only know the one version.
Well, you'd hear it the next season. There'd be other itinerant musicians in the area and be like, I wish this guy was always here.
Unless they live with you. Unless they live with
you. It'd be like if Jimi Hendrix was wandering around like a traveling minstrel. You'd be happy that Hendrix was in town. But then he might be out of town and you can't hear Hendrix for 2 years. Now I can hear Jimi Hendrix anytime I want.
But there's so many talented people. Just even, you know, way back when, people were still talented. Even though they didn't have the instruments or the technology we have today, there were still people of talent.
Yeah.
And a lot of them relied solely upon their voices. So there's plenty of people. I mean, just put this in perspective. So throughout the world, in any town in the world, you're probably going to have at least one talented vocalist, if not two, right? Because that seems to be how the statistics work out if you see all of these different programs like The Voice and American Idol and, you know, all the talent shows for the world, all in the world over. So you can, I don't think that a lack of talented people would be a problem way back when. I think it's just made it more, it made it become an industry. I just got through watching this documentary on PBS called American Epic, which was essentially about when the record companies took the first electronic recording devices and went to the less traveled corners of America to record things with those devices. And it was incredibly fascinating. There was a guy, I forget what part of the country he did this, but he found one of those devices and rebuilt it over the course of 10 years. And this kind of like where the documentary comes in is he rebuilt this. And this is the device that was used to record the Carter family. It was the device that was first used to record the Hopi snake dancers, the Hawaiian music. What else? There was blues music coming out of Tennessee.
And
now, this is something that he just, like a couple of years ago, finally finished. This is the only device of its kind in the world. And he rebuilt it, and it hadn't been working for 80 years. So he took like 10 of those years to get it rebuilding. And so it became this program that he did with Jack White and T-Bone Burnett. And I forget who else was. Robert Redford was also an executive producer, and he narrated a large part of it. And then what they did in the final episode is they did modern-day recordings with that device with the Avett brothers. They did one song, and then they had a number of other people, some famous, some not. Like Beck was on it. The rapper Nas did a song from the Memphis Jug Band from the 1920s, but he rapped to that song. It was pretty cool,
actually. Wow.
And anyway, so the point is that these devices are amazing, and that becomes like an interesting time traveling experiment when you take that device and help people record on it, and then take people with modern day sensibilities and record on it now. I don't know what my point is, but it was just kind of a fun documentary, and the fact that they were doing it with the first electronic recording device and how they were able to create certain music cultures with that specific device.
Yeah.
Prime example. So you're familiar, I'm assuming you're familiar with the Carter family, right?
Yeah, I like.
They're considered like the I guess progenitors of modern country music. They were living in the hills of Tennessee, and they heard about, there was this guy from New York who was in Bristol, Tennessee, who was going to do a recording over the course of a couple of days. And so the patriarch of the family, it was just three of them, goes, "We're going to go do this," and he has to talk the other two into it, which is his wife and I think his niece, or the sister to his wife. Either way, he has to talk them into going, and then it takes them like a day to get there because there were no paved roads at the time. So they had to take like an old Model T, because this is like 1923, 24, or something like that.
Yeah.
Through these mud ruts, and they had flat tires, and just the amount of persistence that it took for them to get there, and they're basically hillbillies, they're mountain folk, you know, and they don't know, they've never heard a recording before, and according to the documentary, most people in that time of the United States had never heard a recording before. They've only had like live music for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So they go there in this hope and dream of, you know, maybe something will happen from this. And so this, because of the desire of this one guy getting to this town across his state, overcoming these various different obstacles, it changed the course of music history because of one person, right? So I think I'm looking in terms of the inventions aspect of this is...
I just read a graphic novel about the Carter family. It was their whole history. And he was amazing because he was a song collector. Like a guy who goes out there collecting berries, he would just go into the backwoods. Every person knew some old song that was never recorded. And he would just go up to some old lady in a shack and say, "Hey, do you know any of the old songs, the old timey songs?" She said, "Sure." And he would write them down and kind of stole them, I guess. But they were there to be stolen. They were folk songs. But I think he credited him. He gave himself the credit on the songwriting. He got those ASCAP fees. I don't know if there was ASCAP back then. But it's fascinating that he did
Did you say ABSCAM?
ASCAP, not ABSCAM. Yeah, the FBI was involved. They were worried about his song collecting.
It's from back in the 20s. So we need
your
to put
counterfeiting songs, sir.
We're going to get them. We're going to get you and your family and those high, tinny voices. We're going to get them all.
I wanted to backtrack for a second and say that I wasn't saying that Hendrix needs to get in a time machine and go back to 1600. I know there was many great musicians then. There's lute players who were better than Hendrix, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Or whatever instruments they played. But just the fact that you could have access to all of them. You might live in a town with the best musicians in the world, but at 2 a.m, if you want to hear their song, you can't go get them out of bed. Say, "Hey guys, I really want to hear that song again."
Well, you know, generally at 2 a.m. way back when, people were sound asleep because they woke to plow the fields and they went to bed when it was dark.
You couldn't hear that song.
Because they were exhausted.
Hear that song.
But okay, so I think that's what brought me to that documentary. So the one of the stories within it is the reason why some blues singers were quite loud in how they sang is because they learned how to sing while plowing fields with a mule, and they'd be yelling at the mule all day long, and that would cause their voices to get stronger and stronger. And it was really fascinating to hear that perspective. It was like one of the descendants or associates of either Charlie Patton or Robert Johnson. I can't remember who.
I wonder if I get a mule, I'll become a better karaoke singer. Maybe I should get a mule.
I think just getting the mule won't do it. I think you have to get yourself.
No, I yell at him.
You have to get a field. You need a reason to yell at the mule instead of just. Because if you want to yell at something, you could yell at your wall all day long, like many people do.
That's
or
true.
Find a local bush while you're walking down the street and yell at that.
I've done that.
And said, so you're that guy. You're the one who's yelling at
yeah,
bushes
yeah.
down the road. Anyway, regardless, so I guess my point was, I don't know what my point is. This is the other thing I learned from our last podcast, is that I say my point is a lot, and my point is often not a point at all. It's just something that came to mind, and I preface it with my point is, so I guess so I don't have to think too much.
It's kind of a point. A little off point.
Doesn't have to do with with the most popular or the most famous or most useful invention. So,
what's your favorite invention?
I don't know. We're doing favorites. We're doing useful inventions. I have favorites, but I mean,
no, I want favorite. Everyone knows the useful ones. Like, yes, the automobile changed the world and the airplane.
But going before the automobile, it's like taking it back to the earliest thing that changed everything. Is it the wheel, or is it something else that predated the wheel?
Fire.
Okay, so what was before fire? So what was the thing before fire that was the great invention?
Dinosaurs?
I don't think that's an invention.
They invented the dinosaur.
They were all sitting around going, you know, I think we need some scaly skinned creatures with really sharp teeth and tiny little hands to come after us and kill us.
It would make life
I think
more
we can
friendly.
Make. I think we can create these out of leaves, twigs, and perhaps the stuff in Ugo's ear over there. And I say Ugo because I don't know their names. Yeah, I
that
don't.
Was the most popular name in caveman times. Ugo.
Ugo.
Well, the second most popular name in those times was Chad. Strangely enough,
Chad.
Chad was a very big name in caveman times after
oh, yeah?
Ugo.
All right,
okay,
so back to
point.
Yes. What would that be, Greg?
Your favorite invention, like the one that you're favorite. Glad they made, not like it changed history, but you're so glad that, thank God, someone invented this.
I'm going to say the internet.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm going to say the internet because the internet, imagine the quarantine without the internet.
Oh my God, how many more people would have been out of work?
Imagine it without any outside connection except for like cable TV, right? Like, that would be the extent of how you would get your information. You get your information from newspapers and television, and word of mouth is essentially where you get all your data from. So the internet has been this incredible device to create the most amount of information that the most amount of people can disbelieve and say is not true. That is what it's become. No, no, there's tons of very exacting scientific information that people will not want to believe in because that would mean their theories would be shot, and they can't have that, you know. So the best thing to do is to pretend that it doesn't exist. So that's what I think is the best part about the internet, is that you have all of this information that you can choose to just not believe, and then make up your own theories that you can spread to other people and say, you know, it doesn't have to be backed up with science. It only has to be backed up by five other people who believe the same thing as I do, saying it in different places, because that's what makes it true. Yeah. I think I'm going on a little bit of a rant here.
Without the internet, you would have never known about Pizzagate. You would have never known about the 5G tower, cell tower conspiracy. I mean,
right?
You wouldn't even know those things. You'd be ignorant.
Right. Yeah. So if we're going to do that, if I'm going to go into this particular realm, then in reality, we'll have to talk about the Gutenberg Press then as being the thing that is the most revolutionary, because without the Gutenberg Press, we probably wouldn't have the internet.
Yes, but is that your favorite invention? Has that? Are you so glad that he did that? I'm not talking about historically.
I think
see as an answer.
Yes, I think the Gutenberg Press is the thing that probably most revolutionized everything on humanity. Everything on humanity? I don't even know what that means. I think that most revolutionized all countries of the world at nearly the same time once it went into mass production. So what that enabled, that's kind of like the herald of the information age was the advent of the Gutenberg press, in my opinion, because that's what enabled mass production of ideas, as opposed to Joe Bob down the road with his giant white beard saying, "And in my day, the only way you could get milk was if you squeeze the teat of a horse, and it had to be a horse that belonged to Sadie or one of Sadie's people."
What's your source on that, Joe Bob? I'm gonna need to see some sources.
You know,
What kind of journalism is
it
this?
was handed down to me by my daddy and my granddaddy and
Are they
his
credible
daddy and
sources?
all. How dare you talk about my daddy that way?
Your
We will
dad could
start a
spin a
war. You
tale.
are Hatfield. I am McCoy. You are going to die if
Your
you do
dad could
not
spin a yarn.
accept my daddy. Not such a. That's women's work. I don't know what you're talking about, spinning yarn. Listen, boy. I don't know. Where me? Stop. I have to. Enough.
Okay, I'll get off your land. Yeah, well, you were about to say something about more invention stuff.
I
What was
don't
that
know what
supposed
I
to
think.
base?
It had something to do with. It had something to do with where people got their information from before. So it was all handed down. It was all word of mouth. You know, it was done from what other people told other people. And that's why there's a point in time and there's no written records of anything because they didn't know how to write things down or what they. I mean, maybe we could take it even further. So finding or creating documentation like papyrus where things could. And ink. That could last longer for posterity. It's like how many scrolls are left from the old Library of Alexandria?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Or just writing in general. It doesn't matter what it's on. Just whoever came up with writing that you could convey an idea in your head with a bunch of little symbols. And I was reading this, that guy Alan Moore was talking about how magic words are when you consider that it's a time machine. Like Sappho the poet, a Greek poet, I know how she felt. This woman who died 3,000 years ago, I can still read her poetry and be like, oh, I kind of, she's like my friend. I get where she's coming from. Yeah, that's amazing when you think about it.
She's your friend?
She's like a friend.
Your
She's like,
long
oh, I.
dead friend?
She could be like my friends, I said. You know, like, well, that reminds me of my friend, Blapho. And I could be like, I get where she's coming from.
Well, let's put that a little bit of perspective. She would not be your friend, just like every other author alive today is not your friend.
She might be. I might have, because a lot of lesbians used to like me.
How
I
many
was like
authors
lesbian
do you
friendly.
have as friends currently? The main point I'm trying to make here is that you would not have her as a friend because you don't currently have anybody like that as a friend.
No,
That is
but
all.
I never said that. First of all, I said she reminds me of one of my friends. I know I'm not friends with Sappho, and I
I
wouldn't be.
if we if we rewind this, I
I said she's
guarantee
like
you.
a friend.
No, she said she's a friend. You said
I
she's a
did.
friend, and that's
Okay,
what I
you don't have to
latched onto.
levitate. You're probably right,
Okay,
but
people need to remember what these law offices are. They're the
yes.
law offices of quibble, squabble, and bicker, and that's exactly what's happening right now.
No, they're not. It's squabble, bicker, and quibble. No, I'm just saying though, it is like you can get a sense like when like everyone has their own way of looking at the world. You have a certain philosophy, and when you die, that's going to die with you. But it won't because of written
If I,
language.
when I die, dying is going to die with me?
No, your thought, your particular worldview dies
Oh,
with
got
you.
it.
The way
Yes.
the way Matt thinks, the way you look at the world, which is unique from everyone, that would die with you. But writing, it can continue forever as
Well,
long as that
thank you
page.
for making me so important, Greg, by saying that
I didn't say you were important. I'm just
die
saying all of
forever,
us
that my
have our own
concepts.
perspective.
That are mine are the most unique concepts and the best concepts of the world. So I appreciate, Greg, that you have
Future
recognized that.
generations will be so happy that you have podcasts. Okay, let's try to do some work for our client though. So other
Does
inventions
our
that
client
maybe
deserve our time?
they're not paying much, but
No, they
well
never do.
nothing.
The last
But
client has paid us 1 penny. So we have made
wow.
1 penny so far from our previous client of Favorite Ethnic Foods. They're,
And I'm the senior partner, so I get that penny.
you can
You'll
have
get
the
the next
pen.
penny.
I'm willing to work for free for a while.
I think a lot of inventions too, they're remarkable. They definitely change history, but I wish they were never made. Like I gotta say, atomic energy. Because even at its best, not used as a weapon, it would be beautiful if humans weren't dumbasses. You know, it's clean, efficient, but there's human errors built in, and they humans will fuck up and not cool the light, the power rods, and it'll have a 3 mile island.
Right. So, well, but there are plenty of devices that are run by atomic energy, and that it's been very useful in that regard. But yeah, I mean, the problem we have with atomic energy is the dirt left behind, the radioactive dirt, which is, what do we do with that? You know. But I think one of the, and I hate to say this, one of the positive things about atomic energy or atomic weaponry has been the deterrent factor. So it's worked to a large degree in preventing a lot of wars because people don't want to get bombed. They don't want to have the radiation, and they don't want people to die in that particular
method. I'd rather take the chance. That's horrible, though, because it's unthinkable to use. So, yeah, you are deterring. But I think America was pretty strong. Nobody would really attack us. I mean, Japan did.
Well, I think you just canceled out your argument.
No, I'm saying, but we weren't even that strong then. America, even without our nuclear bombs, we built up a kick-ass military that, I mean, yeah, madman might attack us. So that's going to happen.
Right.
But for the most part, we're not
going to be invaded
like Liechtenstein. Probably got invaded every 5 years. People are like, look at Liechtenstein.
Or Poland. They're tiny. Right.
Yeah. Russia even got invaded all the time, even though they were huge.
Well, they just never could get very far when they invaded Russia. Usually they got stopped.
I'd rather have maybe the chance of being invaded than nuclear bombs out there that could kill us all and ruin the world, kill the world any minute. I don't know if it's a good trade-off.
Well, I agree in terms of the trade-off being horrible because it would be devastating. The Earth would come back. Just because the Earth would.
That's true. You know,
it may take a billion years, but the Earth would come back just because the Earth has nothing else to do. You know, but people talk about saving the planet. It's not really saving the planet. It's saving humanity. And I think that's where things get, or the humanity and every living thing that's on it. And I think that's where things get conflated and maybe things get confused. And that's why some people give bad argumentation whenever they're trying to demean these concepts like global warming and what have you.
And we almost did it in the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Right.
Russia, we were both to blame. We're like, this little conflict, we might destroy the world over this stupid little political squabble.
Right. And, you know, I mean, maybe you could say the greatest invention to humanity in that case could be diplomacy. When people invented diplomacy as a method to prevent war.
I don't know if that's an invention, though. I think that's just reasoning. People always had that, even two cavemen. Like, hey, that's my club. That's mine. Let's not beat each other up over it. Let's talk about it.
Well, it is a subject. Diplomacy is a subject. It is something that can be studied. You know, it's something that's created in terms of as a topic of learning. You know, then we can look at another aspect in terms of the most useful inventions, perhaps the plow. Would be considered one of the most useful inventions. The device that was created to make it easier to seed a field.
These are all boring, typical things. I'm talking about good things that actually you like.
So you're saying a plow is not a good thing?
Does that make you happy that the plow was
invented? I think you're confused by our client. Our client is the most useful. Our client is the most useful inventions. You've decided to make the client the most favorite inventions, which was not what the client is.
That's more personal.
You'll have to take that up with the client, though. The client will have to disagree with you.
Let's drop this client. I don't like them anymore. I just think that, you know, like, these are all things we heard in school. We always heard the cotton gin, the automobile, the electric light bulb.
I didn't hear the plow in school. I mean, I heard about plowing.
Because that was too primitive. It was always like the 20th century, 18th century, 19th century stuff that was like, these are the things, because, you know, that was the age of technology. Things really started to accelerate. All these crazy inventions were happening every 5 years.
Well, you could have favorite inventions that are also very useful. I mean, if you could, that comes, unless you have an invention that's not useful and it's your favorite, then there's just something wrong with you, which we already knew. So the question is then, if you're going to say your favorite, so what's your favorite useful invention, or why limit it to one? You can have many.
Well, I think recording music is very useful. I mean, it created a huge industry.
An industry that has been decimated in recent years because of
Really. People are still making money from recorded music, not necessarily records and CDs, but there's tons of musicians out there.
Yeah, but they're not making the money they used to make.
No, they're not.
Yeah, it's
but more guys, I bet, are making a little bit of money because it used to have the record companies were like gatekeepers, like a small handful were rock stars.
Right.
And there'd be maybe a few one-hit wonders and they were out. But now it's like all these guys have little careers, little bands. They can go on tour. They sell enough records online.
Right. And that kind of goes back to the internet being probably the most useful invention of the modern age.
That's a fun, useful invention.
Because without the internet, think of all the things we would lose without the internet. All the industries we would lose. Well, first of all, it's like the World Wide Web came about because of the internet. Email came about because of the internet, right? Just going back that far.
People who work from home, that they couldn't have had this job because they couldn't relocate, but now they can. Like,
all we're doing
work on computers.
We're doing a computer telecast using the internet because somebody developed an application so that we could see each other and we could talk to each other without
having.
That might
be a bad use of the internet. So I don't know if that's a good example.
That will be determined by our lack of listeners and subscribers. So we'll know this to be a fact when we know how unsuccessful this particular podcast will become.
Like if the penny dries up next week, if we don't get a penny this week, you'll be like,
Right, if we don't get the extra penny.
Downturn in profits.
You know, but we did have, I don't remember, we had, I think, 20 listens last week. I don't know if we'll get the same this week or not, but...
how many were us, though? You listened to it how many times? I listened to it once. And you listened to it, what, at least three times?
If I listen to it from the app, it doesn't show up as a listen. We had 20 total plays, 10 estimated audience. But we're on numerous different platforms now. We're on Google Podcasts. I think we're on Apple Podcasts now, too, and a few others. So there's a way
for people to reach us. Are any of those listeners internet influencers? Who can do something for us? Any of those?
I don't think any of them are influencers of any kind. If they are, they were not influenced by us.
Or they're under the influence.
I think you might be under the influence because you generally are. Unless you're strangely sober today.
No, that would be foolish. I can't do a podcast sober.
Why? Why can't you do one sober?
I don't know. I think I'd be more self-conscious.
So for you, your favorite invention is alcohol.
Oh, you're right. That's the escape from life's worries. I've often said that, you know, like, alcohol definitely can lead to bad shit. But that's why they didn't shut down the alcohol stores. They were considered essential services during the pandemic shutdown because they knew that people would lose their shit. Sometimes life just sucks.
Well, they knew that people would make it in their bathtub and they wouldn't want them to die from bad moonshine.
That too, yeah. Prohibition. But people, life sometimes sucks. All the thinking, clear-headed thinking is not going to change your circumstances. It's just you're in a shitty situation. Yeah. So it's nice to escape. And I don't have to worry about today. I had a shitty day. I'm going to escape for a couple hours, feel a little happier and mellow. It's a nice thing. Of course, it can not be a nice thing if you keep doing it over and over.
Yeah, well, but the interesting thing is that one can experience life without alcohol at all, and it's pretty much the same. You know, I think what alcohol does is it numbs you a bit. It puts on a different perspective of what's going on around you, so you're not actually seeing reality.
Because sometimes reality sucks. Sometimes the reality of your situation is like, I can't think my way through this problem.
But we need to confront those things.
Imagine, like, this girl doesn't love me. You've probably been in that situation. You can't think your way around it and be crafty. Ooh,
everyone loves me, Greg.
That's true. You never had that problem.
None of them have dropped their... All of my exes still love me unconditionally.
I'm sure. They still call you.
That's called the invention of delusion. Anyway, but that's a whole different issue. That's the invention of delusion and insanity. And that's not... those aren't useful inventions.
Like it's alcohol. Having that escape valve to the pressures of life.
Yeah, there's that too. And there's a lot of people who drink into their mugs to drown their sorrows away. And yet the sorrows still exist.
I think a lot of people, that's why they drink.
Yes.
A lot of addiction is just because people are unhappy. You know, like, I just heard this thing, interesting thing about the war on drugs where, like, if somebody told you, like, okay, like in a movie, one of those crappy like action movies where we've kidnapped her daughter and we're injecting her with heroin every day so she becomes a junkie. And like in trashy movies and shit, And of course she does. But old women, when they go to the hospital in England, they get pharmaceutical grade heroin. This shit is good.
Well, they can just go there and like ask for it.
And they do what afterward?
I said they can just go to the hospital and ask for pharmaceutical grade.
No, I'm saying if they had an operation, they need painkillers. All these women don't come, the old people don't come out of the hospital junkies because their lives, unless they were, had really bad lives, you know, a lot of issues. A lot of people, you could shoot them full of heroin and they won't become a junkie, even though it is physically, like they'll shake it. But their lives are pretty good.
You understand junkies, that there's tons of people who are given pharmaceutical drugs and become addicted to them?
Yeah, they probably had a hole in their life they were trying to fill. They just didn't know how to fill it.
Maybe, well, or maybe they don't know. Or maybe because they've been in such pain and they're using it. Because a lot of times addiction is created because of a physical thing, not because of an emotional thing. It's like directly ingrained with the body, and heroin is one of those things that causes that. It's like the body goes through these withdrawals where it needs to have those drugs back in the system so that it won't feel like it's dying. So yeah. I'm going to have to disagree with your particular assessment there whenever you're talking about heroin. Or maybe something else a little less strong that people decide become.
I'm saying there's even junkies who have shaken heroin for a little while. People with that mentality, like they've got these shitty lives. They do heroin to escape. And then they go back on it because their life still sucks. Some people, might get addicted to opioids during a surgery, but their life is pretty healthy. They've got a good support system. Yeah, it was tough. It took me a month. I don't care anymore. I don't need them. My life isn't this gaping hole that I need to fill with numbness. So a lot of people are like that. And that's why the main reason people become addicts. If they were just had a good support system or mentally healthy, they wouldn't need it. They'd just be like,
I think that's a nice fairy tale that you've devised, but I'm going to disagree with you there.
This was a drug specialist who was talking. Like, he's an addiction guy.
Yeah, good for him. Anyway, the whole point here is that my opinion is always the right one, Greg, and don't ever forget that.
I've learned this, man. I should shut up now.
I will certainly disagree.
You know, I'm not sad we're disagreeing.
I know more than anybody who's studied their subjects for a lifetime. Don't ever forget that.
I don't mind that we're disabusing our clients' trust in our skills at all.
Regarding,
because, you know, modern adventure.
There's so many, but really, there's so many use. Let's maybe we can take it down to lesser known useful inventions. So, or less celebrated useful inventions. Here's like a great one. The aglet is a great invention that is not celebrated.
Yes,
at
you're
all.
Right. You couldn't. It would be so hard to tie your shoes.
Yeah, it would be. It's like, how do you get them threaded except for that little plastic piece at the end to get it through that hole? You know, it's like this simple little thing. Velcro is another one. This is probably one of the modern. There was something I was watching recently where they refer to it as magic tape as opposed to Velcro. I could see that perspective, you know, that it is.
It's pretty handy.
It is. Little hooks and little loops that somehow keep things together. And you can use it over and over and over again. It's kind of amazing.
I was going to say, what about the Atari 2600? Where does that stand?
That's a gaming system, not so much.
It was an invention. It was an invention.
Which part of it was an invention?
Having a video game with cartridges so you could have different games. You weren't just stuck with Pong.
Right, but the cartridges are different inventions too. So what's what's the actual invention?
A machine that plays those cartridges, and you could watch it on your TV.
Well, what's the thing within it that caused it to be able to work?
Some smarty pants inventions and geek thought of, hey, if you put the hoo-ha to the doodad, we'll have this machine that you could put cartridges in, and it'll play video games on your TV set.
That's
an invention. I'm sure it was patented. It was patented.
I think those are the actual terms that are in the patent for the Atari. Well, if you look at the overall flowchart, you've got the hoo-ha connected to the doodad and connected to the jew-gaw over here, and then the wok-wok, and all of them together combined create the fnick-tick, and then eventually you get to the Atari.
But you need the central. You need the central Framazat unit. That's the most important thing.
The central Framazat
unit?
The Scamazat? What is that?
The central Framazat unit. It's the. Every computer has one. It's the main thing. So that's Atari was a might, like it did change a lot. I mean, if you were that age, oh my God, like every kid was glued to their TV because of their Atari for hours a day. Like,
well, remember when there were only pinball machines, and then one day, Space Invaders showed up, and Pac-Man showed up, and Asteroids showed up, and
remember the proto video games before that? Like there was Pong.
Okay.
And then there was that one Sea Hunt where there was a submarine. You'd be dropping depth charges on submarines. That was like in 74 that was around. Do you remember that one?
74? Yeah, God, I can't remember the beginning. I just remember like in 1980, 79, 80 is whenever I first experienced like Space Invaders.
Yeah, that's when video
at a bowling alley. But before that, I was playing pinball games. I never noticed those things before. So it could be I just wasn't aware.
They were rare.
But pinball was like the fun thing to play, you know, and it still kind of, you know, it brings back these nostalgic memories of playing. But entertainment devices are kind of an interesting concept in terms of going back for inventions as well. So it's like everything has kind of evolved in different directions from some small thing, right? So if we're looking at games, like pinball or whatever. So where did pinball come from?
Probably like maybe based on pachinko, that Japanese game.
And pachinko is probably before pinball, I would think.
I think so. I think that's old.
It's like an easier thing to make because you make it with pegs and steel balls and they just fall down and land. It's that was more technology. Of like it was like a gambling device, right?
Yeah.
So I would think that if we had like some older listeners or subscribers or whatever we want to call them, older potential clients. Maybe that's what we should call them. Potential clients, not listeners or subscribers.
I'm sure that they're like in the Middle Ages, maybe there was some king who had a giant pinball thing and it put serfs in this ball and shoot them around.
This is like from the Mel Brooks movie, The History of the World War One, where he had the human chess pieces and move them around, which of course has been in every community Renaissance festival across the country. But, you know, maybe it's gone from there. Well, I mean, there's lawn bowling, right? So I think bowling is probably something and where it translated to a ball bouncing around on a table. Or maybe pool, you know, billiards.
Pool.
That is like possibly an earlier concept of it, bumper pool. So maybe from pool from billiards or snooker to pocket pool to bumper pool. To then combining bumper pool with flippers. So they're like, maybe looking at tennis, combining it like little paddles. You know, they can whack the little ball around, cause it to bounce around using the bumper pool things. And I'm trying to think of like the early pinball tables, like what they looked like. So they had like the things that would pop up whenever you hit them, or they'd go down and then pop up later. And, I don't know. I feel like I need to now research something. Like where did pinball come from? I need to put my glasses on for this though. The origins of pinball. This is from Wikipedia. So if people don't like Wikipedia, that's fine because a lot of this stuff is on there are lies. But we're going to use it as a basis for truth for this regard. The origins of pinball are intertwined with the history of many other games. Games played outdoors by rolling balls, such as bocce or bowls. That evolved into local ground billiards, like croquet, golf. Those derive from ground billiards or variants of those. And then those led to indoor versions that could be played on a table like billiards, right? Bowling, shuffleboard. So those are like the ancestors of modern pinball. So I was kind of on the right track. Sometimes I can figure stuff out. All right, so then
Atari 2600 is based on the 8-track machine.
What?
The Atari 2600 was based on the 8-track recording.
I think I could see that. I don't know if it's correct, but it's a cartridge, so that's possible.
When I was a kid, me and my friend tried to lie to all of our schoolmates, and we said, the other day, we crammed an 8-track of Kiss into our Atari machine, and these weird images of Kiss, video game images of Kiss came on our TV. We actually had some kids be like, really? Even though it's so much bigger, it couldn't even fit. But we were like, yeah, we crammed it in somehow with a hammer.
Well, all those early Atari games looked like a Kiss album anyway. Anyway, so billiard tables were never. So during The reign of Louis XIV in France from 1643 to 1715. So pinball is going back to France now.
What?
Players would shoot balls with a stick or a cue from the other end on a table in a game inspired as much by bowling as billiards. Pins took too long to reset when they were knocked down, so they were eventually fixed to the table, and holes in the bed of the table became the targets. So then players could ricochet balls off the pins to achieve the harder scoreable holes. And so that game eventually became known as Bagatelle. And then somewhere between the 1750s and 1770s, so this is like 100 to 50 years later, 50 to 100 years later, however you want to say it. 50 to 100, 100 to 50, one of the two. There was a Bagatelle variant called Japanese billiards, which were strangely invented in Western Europe, despite its name, that used thin metal pins, replaced the cue at the player's end of the table with a coiled spring and a plunger. So basically, you've got pool using a plunger. Bing! Pull and shoot. And the players shot balls up an inclined playing field to the scoring targets using the plunger, and that's what's in pinball to this day. And but that game was also ancestral to pachinko, so that's kind of interesting. So that device helped create pachinko and pinball. They kind of diverged, it seems. And then the spring launcher is like the main thing. So here's the invention. So a British inventor, and this is the name that I think you should go by from now on, Montague Redgrave.
Wow,
I think
fancy.
that should be your name now, Greg.
I impress people.
So he settled in the U.S. and he manufactured Bagatelle tables in Ohio, and then he got a patent for improving the Bagatelle, which is the spring launcher. And then he also shrank the size so that it could fit atop a bar or a counter. The balls became marbles, the wickets became small metal pins, and because of the spring launcher and the innovation, this became the birth of pinball in its modern form. So we're going to end off in that history lesson of pinball, because then 1931 is whenever they began the introduction of coin operation with pinball machines.
I never liked pinball. It seemed like luck to me. So much of pinball just seemed like, yeah, the ball's going down the center. I can't do anything.
Well,
I lost the ball.
there's certainly quite a bit of luck, but there is some method to it. We used to cheat a
I
little
know.
bit when I was a kid, because sometimes the ball would come down too fast, so we would actually raise up the front legs. We would like put
That didn't
four.
make it tilt? You didn't
No,
get.
before we started playing.
Oh,
Yeah,
wow.
so
Crafty.
we raised up the front legs
You
to
put like a
put,
book under it?
yeah, or whatever we happen to have handy, like matchbook covers or whatever else, and put them underneath. There's also a way where you could spin the legs. It usually had like these metal screws on the bottom of them where you can unscrew them to a bit so you could raise up that part, because sometimes the people who installed them made them like that so that you would lose your money faster,
Okay.
if anybody cares. You know, it's funny, as I've been doing some research into podcasts, which I never thought I would ever do, because I shouldn't say this, but I don't listen to podcasts, and I know there's something wrong with me because I don't, and I know that how dare I get involved in a medium that I haven't done any research in, nor have I done any exploring in, nor have I participated in
Well,
any
you don't
way.
like hearing other people's thoughts. You like spouting your thoughts, it seems.
Well, no, it's not that so much. It's because I get my form of entertainment in different ways
Yes.
that don't involve just strictly listening to things. I'll view, and usually I just don't have the attention span for long-winded people like myself.
Yet you want others to have that attention span and listen to you.
No, I want them to listen to you, Greg. It's not really about listening to me. It's about them listening to you. So
Yeah,
that's
because I'm the shining light of this show.
you are. You are the
I'm the Fonzie.
You're the only reason I wanted to do this. So there was nobody else I
Yeah.
could, like, because I've had people approach me going, I should do a podcast with you, and I'm like, why? Why would anybody want to hear what I have to say? My words are valueless.
Or just like, I don't even like being in a room with you. Why would I want to be a podcast with you?
I'm like, no one was. I'm like, there's a reason I don't have any friends. I'm generally annoying. I'm definitely opinionated, and with an opinion, again, it means nothing. I usually play devil's advocate, and so I drive people mad because I'm
Yeah.
always taking the opposing side.
and sometimes cruel.
And also because of the fact that I come across, what are the various different words? Condescending, patronizing.
Pompous.
I pontificate, although this is the perfect medium for pontification because this is where people go to hear themselves talk. You know, and I go, and obviously I must be thoroughly egotistical to consider that anybody would want to hear what I have to say, especially considering there are thousands and thousands of other programs people listen to. I'm sorry, Greg, I'm obviously driving away anybody who would listen to this program right now.
Oh, like they were still listening.
So I apologize if I'm taking away your dream of getting a pizza from this particular podcast. People, you really need to understand that we're doing this podcast mainly for the purpose of proving that we can make enough money to buy Greg a pizza one of these days.
That's the dream.
After, if we're lucky, after about 2 years, we might have enough listeners to build up approximately $10 so that we could get like a plain cheese pizza, small, maybe a personal one. I guess only like $6 would work if we get like, I don't know. What kind of pizza did you want, Greg?
Let me just do the math. We're making a penny a week, so 52 cents a year we're going to make from this.
You can't gauge it on 1 week.
Yeah, we might not make a penny some weeks. But let's say after 10 years.
Because we made a penny in a day, and then we haven't made another penny since.
After 10 years, I could have $5 roughly, and I could buy a frozen pizza from Safeway, which would be fine. I'd still feel like I won.
So is that what we're going for? But I thought because you're Italian, based upon our last program, you are not a fan of frozen pizzas, especially not from Round Table because you consider that horrible. But you
I like any pizza.
So you're really judgmental about every pizza. Yes. You'll still eat them.
I'm a connoisseur, but I love even school cafeteria pizza. I used to love that nasty shit. You have to dab with a napkin because there's so much grease on it. I still loved eating it. Pizza is the best food, you know. It's just so yummy and hearty, and I love it, even when it's bad.
That's a different program. We're not going to get back into food.
No, we did that.
You had this opportunity, and you blew it. And that's okay, a client. And it might get us more money from our client. Well, the reason I brought it up was because of the fact that I'm trying to determine what kind of pizza that we're actually aiming for. That you want to buy. Well, if we're going to do it, if we're going to be aiming for a pizza, we need to aim for the correct pizza that you were talking about.
Okay,
so whenever you said you wanted to get a pizza out of this, what was the pizza that you were envisioning that you could get from doing this program?
I want to make enough money so we can fly me to New York so I can get some good New York style pizza.
That is not what you said.
Ideally, I know that's not going to happen. Right, but
that wasn't my question. What's your
ideal pizza to get? And that is my ideal pizza.
No, that wasn't my question. My question was, what was the pizza you were envisioning whenever you said to me that if you could just get a pizza from this, what was the pizza you were envisioning?
Even like Domino's, buying a pizza is a luxury to me. Ordering out for shitty Domino's is a luxury. I buy groceries when they're on sale, and I eat them. Going out to a restaurant is a total luxury. I rarely do it. I love ordering pizzas.
How much money do you spend on booze every week?
Well, that's essential, as the government has declared. I couldn't make it through this pandemic without alcohol.
Pizza delivery has been open the whole time, too.
Yeah, it is. Food's essential, but for people who are rich.
But you haven't answered my question, though. So how much money do you spend a week on booze?
$5,000?
$5,000?
Yeah, at least. I have it trucked in from the distributor wholesale. I probably go through a bottle of bourbon. It's very cheap in Portland because the OCC is $16.50 it costs, this bottle of bourbon I buy. And that's pretty much all I've been drinking because I haven't been going to bars, so I've been a very cheap drunk. But I just want to say, if I was...
But how many bottles do you go through a week?
One. But if I was Bill Gates, I'd order pizza every night from Domino's. If I was filthy rich, I'd be like, I'm ordering pizza again. I wouldn't think about it. I've got enough money in the bank. I could buy pizza every night. I would do it. I love pizza. I could eat pizza all the time.
Okay. So you could get a pizza for less than what you're paying for your bourbon.
Oh, I know, but then I might not be able to afford my bourbon and cigarettes, so that would be even worse. Because not eating pizza doesn't make my hands shake.
So are you telling me you get the DTs?
Yeah, I'll get the DTs if I stop drinking.
For those of our younger listeners, if we have any younger listeners, DTs stands for delirium tremens, which is essentially the shakes you get if you're a filthy boozer who goes without his alcohol for a long period of time.
Why do you act like this isn't a thing anymore? There's still DTs. People still can get the DTs.
Because for the younger listeners or former
potential clients,
the three-year-olds don't.
Well, if they're not drinkers, but yeah.
Right. Well, it's okay for me to try and explain it.
You act like it's like polio. Like, oh,
some people don't know what DTs means. They might think you're talking about some other disease.
Okay.
Or like designated taxi cab or something. I don't know what they would think it is. There's nothing wrong with me explaining it. Have you forgotten one of my qualities? Condescending.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
You're not going to eliminate that in one shot. I mean, think about it. Come on.
How could I forget?
That's what makes this so appealing to people.
People like that. Right. Not many podcasts condescend listeners. So
how many podcasts go into it with utter disdain for anybody who could possibly listen to them?
Yeah, this is a breath of fresh air in the podcast world.
I want to go listen to something that abuses me and that makes me feel bad about myself. That's my favorite kind of programming.
That's the thing, they don't know it yet. They don't know it yet. But then they'll be like, hey, I like this.
I think we probably would just be appealing to, like, goths and cutters. That's basically what... Right. Not people to demean anybody in those particular categories, because I understand there are issues in that regard, and I shouldn't make light of those things, and I apologize if anybody took that badly.
Oh, yeah, Matt's insensitive, too. I forgot to bring that up. Pompous, condescending, insensitive... So that's another adjective.
Why are you even doing this with me? I don't even know.
Because I still love you.
And because you're a masochist, that's why. So it's like...
Yeah, that's what it must be. Yeah,
it's like, all about...
Masochists don't know they're masochists until their first experience. And like, hey, I like getting whipped with the chain.
Do it more.
Yeah.
Say bad things about me.
So people might not know they wanted this in their life. And then they'll be like, hey, I was feel...
Yeah, and the fact is I'm not even that good at it, you know. So it's like you're getting mediocre condescension. You're getting like... mediocre disdain. You're not getting like top of the line disdain. You're not getting top of the line pontificating. You're getting like somebody's like, kind of average, you know? So,
yeah.
But it really comes down to they get what they pay for. So,
give me an example of if you were that. Like, give me the most condescending example of Matt if he was the most condescending, pompous ass.
It's hard for me to do it deliberately. I only really do it as a knee-jerk thing. If I think, because I like to think, I like to consider that I'm actually a decent person. I like to have that perhaps wrong view of myself. Bob. We don't do bits.
You just imitated Billy Bob from Alabama.
I don't do bits. These are spontaneous.
You just did. You did Billy Bob from Alabama in an accent, so I want to hear.
I don't remember that anymore. That has left my memory. It's erased. It can't come back. It's impossible. Yeah. These things, they go out into the ether and they're gone forever. You know.
And yeah, that's, nobody will ever hear
that's
it again.
Why I approach you to do this particular form of entertainment was because we could then preserve these moments. We can go back on them later. But what happens is I save the stuff, and it kind of does get erased. It's like it goes out of my system because I've encapsulated them so perfectly they cannot be duplicated ever again. So then they're gone into the wind and can only be watched over. So that's why things are important.
That's why things are important. Things are important, Matt. Without things, where would the universe be?
I think that's our next T-shirt slogan.
The universe had no things in it. It would be a pretty shitty universe.
That's the next T-shirt slogan. Last episode, it was, what was it? It had to do
Vanessa?
With cobras. No, it was, that could be one.
Oh, yeah, cobras, something like that.
Trying,
buses are fast.
Buses are better at cobra killing.
Yeah.
So, this week, it's things are important.
So we should start like a Patreon.
Doesn't sound as good.
We'll give those t-shirts to people. Certain levels of Patreon support.
You know, we could do Patreon, I suppose. I don't know what good it would do.
Well, it couldn't hurt.
You would get your pizza faster, maybe.
Yeah, there might be some
dinner. I think I just don't understand Patreon because I haven't looked into it. So I just know that people do it and they get like $1 a month for people to subscribe to it. But right now they're getting this content for free, so why would they want to pay?
Well, it's socialism. It's basically these people who just want to support something they like. It's nobody has to pay.
Yeah, but if people want to support something they like, they would already be giving us money.
Yeah, but Patreon makes it easier. Makes it like, I don't know, something about it. And then they give things. So if you gave us $20, you'll get a t-shirt that says things are important.
Oh, maybe I'll talk to my wife, see if she'd be interested in doing that, because she can make stuff.
Yeah.
She's very good at making things.
So our client's probably really pissed that we're talking about our business when we should be helping our client.
Well, it's all about inventions. Everything we're talking about has inventions associated with it.
This is true.
For example, let's just go. You were talking about the invention of writing and using the use of symbols. Well, let's go back even further to the invention of language. Like, how did that come about and why did it get so messed up with everybody? Where did it come from?
It was the Tower of Babel. Just read the good book. It's right there. Duh.
But they must have been speaking something before the Tower of Babel, too.
No, language is amazingly important, but it's ephemeral. It just would disappear. So, like, caveman Ogo could talk to caveman Chad for his whole life. But when Ogo dies, in Chad's memory, they'll exist. But once Chad dies, it'll be like, no one knows what Ogo thought about.
Well, Chad talked to Buffy and passed it on.
Yeah, but it would be watered down. And would he really tell?
But we're not talking about the evolution of the invention. We're talking about the invention itself. So
That's what I'm saying. The invention wasn't as important as written language, because written language can transport that through time into the future forever.
Wait, you're saying language isn't as important as written language?
Yes, because it goes away. It's once you die.
But without language, there would be no written language.
This is true, but
There would have been no need for written language.
The initial invention, just like the car is based on the buggy. Uh-huh. But the car was a much more important invention. It took this other invention and said, we're going to do it better.
I don't know that it was more important.
Well, it had more of an impact on the world. It really seemed to change movement and the way everyone...
The buggy changed movement quite a bit.
The way cities were planned, I mean, people could live in the suburbs. Huge social shifts because of the automobile and other things.
You know? I'm not disagreeing with that.
But the written language...
That everything had its moment that changed the world in its own way and then moved on from there. So it's like you can't really dismiss the importance of language and saying the written language...
I'm just saying
the written language is more important. You wouldn't have it at all without it.
Maybe it's more magical. Like, language just seems like something, they had to develop that. Like, they had to, instead of pointing and going, someone figured out that's called a rock. So we don't have to stick going, which. They could say, rock. Oh, yeah, this. You want this. I'll hand it to you. But then that dies with you. I mean, maybe I'm thinking of sentient thought.
Uh-huh.
Languages are very practical. You could communicate simple things and complex things, but those would die with you. The fact that someone came out with a way of recording a person's personality, basically. If you're writing about your life, it'll live on after you. The way you thought, the way you thought about things, your personality, basically.
Let's take it back a bit. Let's go to, like, the beginning of humanity, right? Like, how soon do you think it took them to create a language? I think they probably created it that first generation.
Well, don't they say crows even have, you know, lots of animals have simple language, like crows can communicate and say, intruder alert.
I'm not talking about crows. I'm talking about intelligent humanity.
That's what I'm saying. Something is primitive.
No, you're saying crows. I'm saying intelligent. I'm saying, all right, you're missing my point.
So obviously humans had it, because humans are more complex than crows. Our brains are bigger. I'm sure we did if crows do it.
Right, but what I'm suggesting is that they created a language within the first generation.
Of human Homo sapien?
The first generation of intelligent thinking human created language like off the bat.
They might have had it before when they were simple monkey people. They might have had some rudimentary like, intruder,
If evolution is true.
Yeah, that's always up in the air.
It is up in the air because it hasn't been proven.
Yeah, sure it is. Okay.
Well, it is.
Well, it's no, I'm totally saying 98% of scientists think it's true. And
98% of scientists can't prove it either.
That's just true. I can't prove that right. There's black holes in the universe.
Right.
But all the evidence points to it and for now, and maybe they'll find out they're wrong.
Yeah, and it's easy. And I'm just saying there's always that possibility, you know, that.
Definitely.
Because I've always had it. I've had a much different theory in terms of the beginning. I think there's a way for both to be correct. And this involves aliens, though. So,
ooh, Terror to the Gods type shit.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So it's essentially Adam and Eve were dropped off here. That's a theory that you can go with.
And there were, like, monkey people here, and they kind of...
No, they just weren't... monkeys did not evolve on this planet, but Adam and Eve could have evolved somewhere else in the universe.
Well, it must have been more than Adam and Eve, because we would have...
Because there hasn't been really enough... There hasn't really been enough time on this planet to create that kind of evolution.
I'm just saying, though, it had to be more than two people, because we'd all be inbred, you know, mongoloids.
Well, certainly. You know, it could have been a whole colony.
Yeah.
Just like the end of Battlestar Galactica, right?
So you think that's more likely, or just as likely as evolution, which all
scientists... I'd say it... I'm saying that they both could be correct. If you toss aliens into the mix, everybody could be right.
It makes it funner too, more exciting.
It does. It makes it more interesting, yeah. And it makes people go, especially those who are like on the fence. I'm of this point of view regarding like the various different theories of things. Let's just say everything's real. Let's just say evolution's correct, religion is correct, ghosts are real, aliens are real. Atlantis existed. Bigfoot is in your backyard. The abominable snowman is roaming the snow caps.
Pizzagate happened.
Hillary
Clinton was running.
All conspiracy theories are real. Ultimately, these are all just weird mysteries that people get sucked into, like these mental traps, right? Which prevents them from actually focusing on what's really important, which is helping each other. That's what's really important, right? And so
Everything
else is just smoke screens, which prevents that from actually happening. So let's just say, fine, all those things are real, whatever. Let's just help the people that we can see. If we see problems going on around us, let's try and make those changes. You know, let's try and find a way to communicate and understand each other and make the world a better place. If it's
possible. My God. You got to edit that out. I'm sorry.
Anyway,
you gotta keep that in.
Me doing a little hand dance. Anyway, regardless of that, getting back to invention.
Yes.
Which is, you know, what we're here today to speak to our client about is what is the most useful invention. So language is important. And that's why I say I think in the first generation that language could have been invented because they had to be able to understand each other. They had to find a way to communicate with that other entity in front of them and get something accomplished. Whatever that something happened to be, like, don't piss on my rock. You know, that particular...
That came up a lot.
It might have, you know, because they didn't have, like, bathrooms back then, and they didn't necessarily have social mores which said, hey, you know, that's my rock, you shouldn't be pissing on it. You know, it's like, I got to sleep on that particular rock, and I don't want to get my fur wet. So, really, you know, could you knock that off, please? So there had to be a way to... And going by from what you were saying before, where it evolved from going, you'd have to do those variations to give a thing significance. So if you had a rock, and let's just say it was called rock to begin with, and you had a different kind of rock, you'd have to, or something that looked like a rock, but it's a potato. So you'd have to go, rocketo.
A different kind of rock, a potato.
Right, I said, but it looks like a rock, but it's actually a potato. So you'd have to make up some other nuance so the other person could know what you're talking about. You know, instead of just like, Raketo, Raketo. I don't know if they, I think they stayed monosyllabic probably in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have as many words. They probably didn't have those. It could be just the potato at the time was just, you can eat it, and rock was, you can't eat it. So it's like bad for teeth, good for teeth.
Well, also, their mouths probably couldn't even talk, just like animals can't talk, no matter how smart they are. They just don't have the physical. You know, our mouths have developed in throats. We can speak, but we couldn't always speak.
According to your theories,
my
yes.
evolution, my wacko evolutionary theory. Let me get back to this, Matt, though.
Yes.
If those two aliens came to Earth,
yeah.
Adam and Eve plus a bunch of other people,
yeah.
they would obviously have language because they came here in a spaceship. They had some high culture in their planet.
Sure, that could be the case too. But they didn't have any. They didn't have any advanced technology or what have you because they were just dumped off like this is a prison planet or something. Kind of like what they did in Australia.
Like Alien Nation.
No, like Australia. You know, people were just like dumped off in Australia. To fend for themselves. Oh, there's a penal colony, so I guess they were taking care of them in some way. They weren't just dumping
I know Australians, and you're being very insensitive again.
How?
By saying that all Australians are dumb.
I didn't say they were dumb.
You just said that.
I said they were dumped off.
You slurred a whole nation of fine,
I did not say they were
intelligent people.
I'm slurring you for thinking I said dumb. I said dumped.
D-U-M-P-D. They were dumped.
They were dumped off in Australia because they were prisoners.
So you're saying they're dumpy. Is that what you're saying?
They were dumped
they're
off
dowdy.
There. They were taken there by the British penal system and put in a colony in Australia to fend for themselves so they cannot come back to the United Kingdom and commit additional crimes.
Could you read the Wikipedia
that
entry?
That is what I'm talking about. What?
Could you read the Wikipedia entry for me? I need more information about this Australia you speak of.
What are you talking about? You don't know the history of Australia?
I was joking, obviously.
Oh, okay.
sorry.
If it was obvious, why did I have to ask?
I get what you're saying about, the Australians.
All right, so if we could put it in that perspective. Let's say people in the beginning of human history were prisoners from some other alien race, some other civilization, extraterrestrial civilization, which is kind of a fun concept to think of, to be honest. So if you could say that our progenitors were criminals and people who are wrong or political prisoners who were just tossed off here way back when.
What? They could have been slaves.
Yeah, but if they were slaves, they'd have to be working for something, so there would be like a community that would be running the slaves, and they would want to have the trappings of their advanced civilization, whereas so we don't really have that here because of that. I'm assuming, if we're going to go with this particular evolutionary model, and when I say evolutionary, I mean non-evolutionary model.
Yeah, put more quotes around it, please. I need more air quotes around your model.
Finger quotes. Or rabbits. We won't call them quotes for now. We'll just call them rabbits around our thoughts.
Well, just because it deserves a lot of rabbits.
These are rabbit thoughts.
This is a very specious thought.
So this particular rabbit thought. All right, so they're just dropped off here to fend for themselves because they're not wanted by their civilization. And they have to figure out a way. And they may be from different planets that may not have the same language. And they have to find a way. But I'm talking about even before then. Let's go back to the beginning of, extraterrestrial life on some other place. They still have to come up with words, too. So, again, that becomes an invention that has to be done to get people to understand each other.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's a useful invention, Greg. Language.
Of course it is.
Is one of the most useful inventions. And, yes, written language is also a useful invention. But there had to be things invented.
But even more.
Written language, prior to creating written language, you had to invent other things. So you had to invent something to write on. And I don't mean power to the people, write on. I mean write, like W-R-I-T-E, in case you're confused. But
yeah, I was totally lost there.
Like what?
Right on. Why is Matt a Black Panther now? What happened? Right on.
Exactly. I am, and I'm not in that movie, for people, if you're wondering. I had nothing to do with it. I'm not in any of the Marvel movies. I'm not an Avenger. So
You're not from Wakanda.
don't let Greg confuse you. So they would have to invent things to write on, and they would have to invent things to write with. So which would come first? The thing they wrote on or the thing they wrote with? Which
It's the
would get
same
invented
fact.
first? Which would get
The first
invented
guy
first?
who said, "Hey, I have this idea that I'm going to write down thoughts. I'm going to use some symbols." It was the same time.
No,
How will
no.
I do this?
You're
I
wrong.
found something that will take an impression,
You're wrong.
clay, a cuneiform tablet. And so he got a stick and wrote it in clay, but it was pretty
No,
much around the same
no.
time.
I'm going to
So you think he had a
disagree.
papyrus and stared at him?
I think that they had something to write on before they had something to write
Of
with.
course, you can write on a brick wall, a rock wall in a cave. You can write on anything.
That's my point.
But, oh, I thought you were saying
So
when
I
the
was saying
idea came.
which one came first, the thing to write on or the thing to write with?
Well,
Which
there's
came
always been
first?
things to write on, so obviously
Right,
first, but
but have there
nobody
always been
wrote down
things to
them.
write with?
It could have been anything, like some burnt stick with
No,
head
no, you
attached.
see, you're not thinking, Greg. You're not thinking. The first thing you write with, which is not, would not be an invention. The first thing you write with would be
Your finger
your
in sand.
finger. Exactly. You would write with or your foot or some a appendage, right? So,
But it's an invention what the finger's doing. You didn't invent the finger as a or writing implement, but
well, I'm saying that that is not the thing that's invented. Now, I think what's then invented is whenever somebody wants to get a lot of concepts down, they go after dipping their finger 100 times in the blood of their enemies to leave their note on the body that they just killed to let their wife know that they'll be late for dinner. What would need to happen is they go, my finger's getting raw. I need something better to write these
Yeah.
messages with so that my wife knows to do something with this body, which would probably actually get consumed for dinner later anyway
So
back
you
then.
agree with me. I said the thing that is written on was invented first because there was rock walls way before fingers, before human
Well,
beings
no, you
existed.
were saying before that they were invented at the same time.
No, as far as writing instruments. There's always been walls, but nobody thought to write letters
No,
on
not
them.
as far as. Well, I think what's happening here is you're not remembering what you said, and that's
I did
probably.
say that. You just didn't know what I meant. Because the invention we're talking about is writing. It's not a writing implement could be your finger.
Yeah.
But if by that definition,
No, we're talking about
writing,
different inventions. Writing
I
is
know
an invention in of itself, but
it is. And
yeah.
the implements they
But
created,
the
pencils,
implements had to be created
brushes.
before the writing happened.
Well, like you said, the finger wasn't an
Yeah.
invention. It
Right.
was the invention was using your finger to make letters and to convey thoughts. But the
Somewhere
word
on
surface
something.
appeared first. That's undeniable. The surface, whatever you wrote on, rock wall,
The artistry on the cave walls, like you mentioned before.
that's what was first, art.
Right, well, that's like their form of communication. They're like communicating something. We don't know that it was art per se. It could just be they're trying to tell a story to somebody about something, so they're trying to get their. Maybe they were like two different villages and they didn't know how to talk to each other, but they could show on a wall what was going on so that somebody else could get it. So we don't know if they did
That's
it for
art too.
artistic purposes or if they did it for communication purposes, or both. I know, it just depends. Anyway, wow, this is like quite a weird tangent we're on. Although still, it's still
They're
within the
inventions.
parameters of what the client has asked, what the client has hired us
Better
for.
than talking about pizza. It's more appropriate.
Well, we could get into inventions involving pizza.
That's an invention.
It's
But let's
like
go back to your crackpot theory about
which one?
No, you were talking
Which of my
about
many
writing
crackpot
implements.
theories do you who are we talking about? The law offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker were unable to complete their meeting with their second client, Most Useful Inventions. They will have to have another meeting with them to fully explore all of their issues. Tune in to the next episode, where you will learn about Hitler's brain, the Crusades, and do planets have rocks? Enjoy! This has been the law offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker computer telecast, where any advice has been designed purely for amusement and deep sea diving. Please take a candy on your way out, pet the lion tamer, and subscribe to this computer telecast if you know it's good for you. The law offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker deny all culpability in today's events and are not to be confused with real law offices that have a secretary and books and stuff. Thank you all. Have a good day.